Hold your head as high as you can, high enough to see who you are, little man. Life sometimes is cold and cruel, maybe no one else will tell you, so remember that you are black gold, black gold.
The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Kathy Bostrom from the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Oprah. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Oprah Daily. What to do at 3 a.m. when you can't fall back asleep? For the love of God, don't open Instagram. By Jesse Van Omberg. My name is Jesse, and I am a certified sleep struggler, patent pending. As a kid, I could sleep anywhere, anytime. On long car trips, I conked out in the back seat before we even hit the freeway. In high school, I came home every afternoon and took a power nap before diving into my hour's worth of homework. Becoming an adult seems to have ruined my sleep forever. I could give Goldilocks a run for her money with how particular everything must be in order for me to drift off. Not too hot, not too cold, quiet but not too quiet. And God forbid there are any lights on within a two-block radius of my bedroom. Even when everything is just right at bedtime, I still wake up in the middle of the night, my mind racing like a cursed radio station that won't turn off. According to data from the CDC, 14.5% of adults have trouble falling asleep, and nearly 18% struggle to stay asleep on most days. Me. And considering that the menopause transition can also wreck your sleep, I'm willing to bet you're a fellow certified sleep struggler too. Waking up in the middle of the night is way more common than people think, says Anjali Ferguson, PhD, a clinical psychologist and founder of Parenting Culture, an online community and resource for culturally inclusive parents. Aside from the obvious reasons we jolt awake, like hearing a car backfire down the street, feeling overheated, or needing to pee, the stress and anxiety we feel in our waking hours is also to blame. Carrying this emotional load can cause a wake-up call in the middle of the night. It is almost like our brain is saying, "We have more to process," she says. Hence the racing thoughts. The next time insomnia strikes, don't just toss and turn the hours away, says Honani Eyal, a licensed clinical psychologist and founder of EL Mind Body Health. If our brain associates our bed and bedroom with feelings of wakefulness, frustration, anxiety, and struggle, that environment will eventually trigger those same responses, she says. Instead, try these science-backed expert tips to lull yourself back to sleep. Numbers 3, 7, and 8 have been game changers for me. Take a breath. Breathing exercises can help you find chill in minutes. Number 1, diaphragmatic breathing. Inhale for 4 seconds, then exhale for 6. Repeat 3 to 5 times, suggests Sarah Silverman, a behavioral sleep medicine specialist. Easy peasy. Number 2, box breathing. Inhale through the nose for 4 seconds, hold for 4, exhale through the mouth for 4, then pause for 4 before taking your next breath. Repeat 3 to 5 times. This technique helps you regulate your nervous system and mimics the rhythm your body naturally flows in when you're in deep rest, says Ferguson. Number 3, 4-7-8 technique. Breathe in through your nose for 4 seconds. Then hold for 7 seconds, says Rebecca Robbins, PhD, assistant professor in medicine at Harvard Medical School. Exhale through your mouth for 8 seconds, pursing your lips and making a whooshing sound. Repeat 3 to 5 times. Now you're in the driver's seat of your heart rate, blood pressure, and peace of mind, she says. Ground yourself. Get out of your head and back into your body. Number 4, body scan. This form of meditation slowly brings your attention to each part of your body, from head to toe, as you release tension or soften muscles as you go, says Ferguson. Try a 10-minute guided option or DIY with a step-by-step primer from Calm. Number 5, progressive muscle relaxation. Also called PMR, this research-backed technique relaxes you by directing focus away from your stress and toward how your body feels. You physically tense and release each major muscle group, working from your head to your toes, explained Silverman. Number 6, 5-4-3-2-1 technique. This exercise focuses on your senses. First, look around your bedroom and name 5 things you can see. Look for small details, such as a pattern on the ceiling, the way light reflects off a surface, or an object you never noticed. Next, identify 4 things you can feel, like your PJs brushing on your skin or the firmness of your mattress. Then 3 things you can hear. Then find 2 things you can smell, whether it's in the air around you or something in your room that's scented, like an unlit candle. And with 1 thing you can taste. Keep mints on your bedside table, suggests Silverman. Pop one in your mouth and focus your attention closely on the flavor. Reroute your brain. Play mental games to stop midnight worry spirals. Number 7, brain dump. Jot down all of your stresses or worries, suggests Robbins. It's simple but effective. Putting it down on paper gets it out of your mind where it can't interrupt your sleep or cause more stress. And then that can be your to-do list for the next day. Also known as constructive worrying, this tactic is a staple of cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, or CBT1. Number 8, cognitive shuffling. Think of a series of random unrelated words or images, just enough to keep your mind gently occupied without getting emotionally involved or problem-solving, says Silverman. Pilot studies show it's pretty effective for sleep issues. She recommends picking a neutral word with 4 to 6 letters, like stone, jump, or river. Take the first letter and think of other unrelated words beginning with that letter. If stone was your word, look for other S words like sun or soothe. Move to the next letter in your starting word and repeat. Pause to visualize each word as you go. And if you're somehow still awake at the end of your word, pick a new one and repeat. Number 9, categories. Similar to cognitive shuffling, think of as many items as you can for 2 or 3 different categories, like animals, countries, cities, celebrities, books, TV shows, movies, sports teams, cars, foods, says Silverman. Or try naming items in a specific category alphabetically. So if you're working with fruits, say apple, banana, cherry, etc. Number 10, name that thing. Silverman suggests naming all of the objects you see in your bedroom or listing out all of your family members, their ages, and their go-to hobby or activity. Number 11, countdown. Not sheep, but actual numbers. Count backward from 100 in intervals of 7, Silverman says. So 100, 93, 86, 79. It's hard enough to distract you from your worries, but boring enough to knock you out. Number 12, backward spelling. Not a numbers person? Challenge your brain with spelling instead. Silverman suggests spelling out your full name and that of 3 other people backwards. Number 13, get glad. And counteract anticipatory panic. Tomorrow is going to suck if I can't get back to sleep. With a prayer or reflection on something good from your day, Robin says. Sleep is so psychological, she says. Keeping it positive is really important. Soothe yourself. Bore yourself to sleep, really. Number 14, read something dull. What book made you nod off in high school English class? Keep a copy on your nightstand in case of insomnia emergencies. The snoozier, the better, says Yao. An audiobook is fair game, too. Number 15, autogenic meditation. Yao recommends this relaxing meditation practice, which is effectively a form of self-hypnosis. This beginner's exercise is a great place to start. Number 16, zone out with music. Alpha or theta wave music can help you conk out too, says Yao. 60 to 70 beats per minute induces relaxation or meditative states, she says. You can easily find playlists and albums on Spotify, Apple Music, or other streaming platforms. Get out of bed for now. When all else fails, get up to wind down. Number 17, legs on the wall. Lie on the floor with your legs resting up against a wall. Keep your arms relaxed at your side or on your stomach. Inhale for 4 counts, then exhale for 6. Repeat as desired. This activates your rest and digest response, or parasympathetic nervous system, Silverman says. Number 18, stretch it out. Roll out a yoga mat and work out the tension in your body with a few gentle stretches or yoga moves, Eyal says. Lay off the head stance, though. You're trying to relax, not send all your blood to your brain. Number 19, walk softly. Slow, light walking in place can also help, says Eyal. Just keep it soft to avoid waking the rest of your household. Number 20, bust out a puzzle, or any other calming activity will do. Needlepoint, folding laundry, whatever is simple and turns off your brain. Return to bed when you feel your eyes droop, says Ferguson. And that was What to Do at 3 a.m. When You Can't Fall Back Asleep by Jesse Van Omberg. Next is I Couldn't Stop Mourning My Younger Self. At 73, I've Learned to Let Her Go by Rebecca Gomer. A 70-year-old woman crosses the finish line after completing a marathon, and we marvel and cheer. An elderly man tosses his canes aside and cuts the rug at his grandson's wedding, and we are amused and uplifted. We read inspiring stories loaded with expectation that our advanced years will allow us to leap forward and come into our own, freeing us to stretch our wings and find our newest best self. The only problem is, I haven't fully said goodbye to my other self yet. The one with knees and hips I could depend on. The one with the stamina to hike urban landscapes as well as mountain trails. The one who, when I had a partner, was able to enjoy sex. And I'm sad in so many ways to lose her. That thing we don't talk about when we talk about aging, it's grief about the accumulated losses that aging brings. A blanket of sadness, patchwork with memories of days gone by. With over 60 million people over 65 years old in the U.S., collective sorrow is brewing. When I was 27, my older sister, 35, died from cancer. After her death, I swore I'd never lie about my age or complain about aging, aware of the privilege of years that my sister would never get to enjoy. Now I'm 73, and I've never lied about my age, but I frequently break that promise about complaining. These old eyes, I say, squinting through my reading glasses at the fuzzy letters on the page. The same old eyes that now prevent me from driving at night. The truth is, I didn't expect to feel so anguished about it. When freedom feels fleeting. The year I turned 40, I received a life-changing gift. A friend offered to teach me to rollerblade. The wild freedom I felt when skating was like reclaiming pieces of my youth I could sense slipping away even then. But 10 years and 2 cities later, it became challenging to find surfaces smooth enough to safely skate. Still, with every move to a new city, my roller blades came with me just in case. I still craved the liberating joy of wind in my hair and sun on my face, the energizing feeling of swaying strides as I flew over the pavement. By the time I was 60, I hadn't skated in years, but I still kept my rollerblades zipped up in their blue nylon bag in my front hall closet. Sure I'd get back to them someday. When I entered my next decade, I had to admit I wouldn't. Weight gain had changed my center of gravity. I'd developed arthritis in my knees, hips, and toe joints, making my movements jerky and awkward, and causing pain in my feet. I also suffered from occasional vertigo brought on by inner ear issues. Painfully aware that a fall at 70 was a far different thing from a fall at 40, I knew it was time to let go. In the midst of packing up to move from New Mexico to North Carolina, where I'd soon become a grandmother, I donated my skates to my favorite thrift store. That day, sitting in my car in the shop's graveled parking lot, I put my head in my hands and sobbed. For days after, I moped around my house, overcome by a heaviness I couldn't name. All I knew was, I felt like I was slowly being erased. Naming the ache. When I've mentioned my grief to other women and asked if they have similar emotions around their increasing physical limitations, the tears have come almost instantly. I miss feeling at home in my body, one friend said, wiping her eyes. Another admitted that realizing she had become invisible was a shock. Aging brings changes in our roles, in our bodily capabilities, in our appearance, in our intimate relationships. Eventually, it steals our independence. As the years take their toll, the constant need to adapt can become overwhelming. So much of our discourse about aging involves how to put a positive spin on these years, and rightly so. Studies have shown that a positive attitude about aging can make all the difference in our quality of life and even extend our lifespan. As a person who hopes for longevity, and who doesn't these days, I take such advice to heart. I also know that two things can be true at once. I can choose to head into the coming years with the intention of making the best of the time and circumstances I'm given. And I can also let myself feel the full emotional weight of yielding to the realities of aging. Still, admitting my sadness feels like I'm breaking an unwritten rule, like I'm admitting weakness or nurturing a bad attitude. When I confess this to Regina Kep, PsyD, a clinical psychologist, gerontologist, and aging expert who founded the Center for Health for Mental Health and Aging in Atlanta, she quickly unburdens me. People going through these experiences aren't given meaningful opportunities to discuss them, or aren't fully listened to when they do, she says. The grief you're feeling is real and valid. It doesn't mean you're ungrateful for your life or that you've lost perspective. You can hold both gratitude for what you have and grief for what you've lost. Stephen Petro, a columnist and author of the books The Joy You Make and Stupid Things I Won't Do When I Get Old, writes frequently about seeking out the positive in the midst of difficulty. Grief and aging can sometimes seem to walk in lockstep. The older we get, the greater the number of losses, which translates into more grief, he says. Petro, whose sister Julie died of cancer in 2023, says he's learned that each loss teaches us about grief, which I've come to find creates resilience, not to mention the feeling that we can live through periods of darkness and find ourselves in the light again. Making room for something new. My shift back into the light came when I realized I could befriend my grief and let it carry me forward. I asked myself, what if I choose to honor and release the things my body used to be able to do, so I can turn to celebrating what my body can do now? I've since written a letter to my wonderful body, with all its wrinkles and stretch marks, thanking it for its strength and resilience, for all the joy it's given me, and for all it has taught me. I've thanked my marvelous brain, the thing that makes everything else function, and asked it to be patient with me as I come to accept and learn to fully embrace the new me. I often think of something else Stephen Petro told me. I look back now and think that loss and its attendant grief open new ways for me to live my life, to enjoy my days. Am I wiser because I'm older? I hope so. Am I wiser and more compassionate because of the grief I've experienced? Probably. I hope these life transitions are making me more compassionate, both to others and with myself. Letting go of things I can no longer do has freed me to discover and delight in the simplest things, like how much I love the powerful feel of using the rowing machine at my local wellness center, part of a new fitness routine I'm trying out. I've also started taking Tai Chi classes. For someone who used to teach high-energy aerobics, I wasn't sure I'd like it, but it's a relief to slow down and be in the moment enough to appreciate all that my body is still capable of doing. I'll never rollerblade again, and I'm finally okay with that. In fact, I love thinking about the person who bought my skates. I hope the wind in their hair and the sun on their face and the feeling of wild speed gives them as much joy as it did me. Meanwhile, I'll be over here practicing waving cloud hands and parting the wild horse's mane. That was I Couldn't Stop Mourning My Younger Self. At 73, I've Learned to Let Her Go by Rebecca Gomer. Next, why you shouldn't wait to celebrate big birthdays. After years of grieving the death of three beloved family members, I decided to choose life with a 38th birthday bonanza by Samantha Leal. I was born in the dead of winter in Indiana. The inevitable snowstorms, illnesses, and other cold weather reasons for canceling that came with the season meant that I often had to temper my expectations of any birthday celebration. The little girl who loved dressing up and eating cake learned to be okay with smaller, more casual to-dos. It's an attitude I largely took with me as an adult, even after relocating to Los Angeles. But this year, I decided to really do it up for my birthday and host a weekend getaway with 10 of my closest friends in Joshua Tree, California. While birthday trips are usually reserved for ages ending in a zero, I was turning 38. Just another year behind me, and two more until I hit 40. But after what I'd been through, this was a milestone. In 2024, I lost three family members, my dad, sister, and half-brother, one right after the other. I sank deep into grief for months. As I slowly and carefully rebuilt myself, with the help of my loved ones and my therapist, I developed a new appreciation for how fleeting life is. Even ordinary things that had once felt obligatory or routine, like renewing my passport, going to my annual physical, and yes, turning another year older, began to feel more significant, a marker that time is still moving and I am still here with it. As my birthday loomed on the calendar, I thought about all the ways my family used to celebrate me, no matter how physically far they were from me. I'd get phone calls, "Happy birthday, Sammy," cards, and photo tributes on social media in honor of the day. But this year, I wouldn't get to hear my sister's voice on the phone or read a message from my dad. I was still here, but they only lived in my memories. I could have let the day go by quietly, but I wanted more than a cake and candles. I wanted to celebrate making it another year, yes, but I also wanted to take time to celebrate my hard-won stability and resilience after all that I'd lost, to make space for joy amidst my heartbreak. So on a beautiful sunny day in early February, I drove to the desert to meet my friends. The Volvo SUV I rented made me feel like I was gliding over the open roads. Concrete and steel high-rises changed to wind turbines, and the sky generously stretched away from me. By the time I spotted the exit for Joshua Tree, I could feel my nervous system downshift from city life to open desert vibes. This was the in-between space I'd been craving. Not the chaos of hosting a party, yet not the grief that had suffused and consumed the past 2 years, but something quieter, a threshold. Turning off the freeway, I headed toward a phone booth connected to nothing, overlooking an expanse of desert scenery. My destination had a purpose. The wind phone was one of many installations created by people, usually grievers, all around the world to give others a place to speak to those they've lost, to just sit with a line to the other side and converse. I'd heard about it a few years ago, but never felt the need to see it myself, until now. I picked up the receiver and dialed the phone numbers of my dad and then my sister. Our cell phone numbers had always been just one digit different. That felt important in this moment, just one number separating me from them. I told them how much I loved them, that I missed them, and that I'd talk to them later. It felt like I was really reaching out to them, the weight of the receiver making it all the more tangible. Hanging up, I felt a small sense of peace and wonderment, of connection beyond place. I took a deep breath and made my way to join the rest of the living. I met my friends at the huge rental house we found through Field Trip, a short-term rental brand. It was our weekend home base with 8 bedrooms, 2 hot tubs, and an open-air design with floor-to-ceiling glass that dissolved the boundary between the indoors and the desert beyond. Over the long weekend, we started each day with coffee on the patio, followed by a hike through Joshua Tree National Park. The otherworldly rock formations and spindly namesake trees made the landscape feel at once prehistoric and futuristic, time suspended across the past, present, and future. Afternoons slipped by in that pleasant desert rhythm, reading in patches of sun, grazing on snacks, cheersing and laughing, drifting between conversation and quiet. On Saturday night, we headed to Mojave Gold, a Yucca Valley restaurant and bar that felt like the 70s come to life. Gold accents and plush seating were the perfect setting for the evening, and I sat at the head of the table overlooking all the faces of people I'd met throughout my life. High school friends, college roommates, and friends I'd made living as an adult in New York City and Los Angeles. They had seen me get a driver's license, go to college, navigate my newfound adulthood, and deal with heartache, layoffs, and now grief. I was struck by how rare and special it is to have this many versions of your life in one room. We toasted with pink bubbly, and I took photos of us in the photo booth because I wanted to remember this. Our faces, my face, joy. By the end of the weekend, after watching the desert sky turn pink and the stars find their positions in the dark, after drinking wine with friends and laughing over meals at big tables, I felt the full weight of my 38 years, but also a lightness. Whatever the next year brought me, the love I was surrounded by on this day and all the others would carry me through. And that was Why You Shouldn't Wait to Celebrate Big Birthdays by Samantha Leal. We've run out of time for today's episode of Oprah Daily. Please join us next time. I'm Kathy Bostrom, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Oprah Daily is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Strength you have in you, girl.